Joel Kahn, who is a, you are a veterinarian, sir.
That's correct.
Thank you very much for being up and at him in the morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you. Now, I wanted to have someone to bounce kind of some stuff off you, and when we talked off the air, you just cleared, I don't know, maybe you just have a really good way of putting things, but I don't think... Well, give you a little of the background. So I took Allie in for a bladder infection, and this all came up because you go in there and they're prescribing one thing, and they're like, oh, this may not work, but we're going to send this culture out and find out if it works. And you're like, well, do I need the prescription now if you don't even know what it is? Well, you don't want her to suffer, do you? So I'm like, well, of course not. So you buy that prescription, then 2 days later, it's like, well, wrong prescription. We need another one. That wasn't doing anything for. And you're like, oh, man, like, this is racking up. But of course, it's Allie. I'm not going to not do it for Allie, you know. So all these things go up, and we had a really good conversation with callers and stuff about, do you think that's overcharged? Do you think, is it almost like going to the mechanic where you're kind of like scrutinizing everything on the invoice? So I'm really excited that you get to come in and share some of the stuff that we shared with each other yesterday on the air, because it was really, really helpful. So do vets, and you don't even have to say for you, but do you notice there's an industry-wide thing where you are overcharging people?
Well, I don't know about overcharging. I think the problem is veterinary medicine has become very expensive. And with advances in veterinary care over the last 5, 10, 20 years, we have more and more things that we can offer diagnostically for pets and things like that, which cost money. And we're operating at a low volume compared to a human hospital or a human pharmacy. And so it will cost more per patient. And obviously, that to some extent, that gets passed on to our clients, unfortunately.
Now, I'm a kind of client or a customer where I'm asking a lot of questions. And I know I was probably asking so many. And they answered all of them. And they were very, very nice at the place I went. And it turns out, I mean, they did everything right. I mean, they nailed down what Allie's issue was. They treated it. I mean, I guess I could have... Do you ever do little prescriptions? So you don't have to waste, drugs. Do you ever go, okay, I'm going to prescribe you 4 pills, 6 pills until Monday when the results come in, and then we'll know. Is that weird to think? Or
well, it sort of depends on the situation and what medication it is and how expensive it is per pill. Most veterinary clinics have, to some extent, a minimum prescription charge. So in some cases, I don't want to send you home with 4 pills if I know I can send you home with 28 pills and for the same price.
Oh, okay. Oh, so really, it's the same. Oh, it's the
potentially. It depends what it is. I mean, if you have a pill that's $5 per pill, that's a different story. So I think that's a case-by-case basis. The other challenge there is not every owner is going to come back. So we may be sending home a 3-day supply of antibiotics with the understanding back.
They mentioned that to me.
And that's a concern, too, because we have, in the human world, only about 40 to 60% of written prescriptions are ever filled. And so that's a factor there, too.
That's really interesting. So do you get offended when you prescribe something for one of your clients' pets and they go, Dr. Kahn, I'd really like to see if I could go take this prescription to, Walmart for $4? Or, I mean, do you hear that more and more happening? Or
I think we probably hear more of that now that you can get these $4 generics and things like that. It doesn't offend me at all.
Is that rude to do?
No, I don't think it's rude at all. I think the bottom line is, I go on Google and I price shop for everything I buy, just like everyone else does. And I think if we can save a few bucks here and a few bucks there, I'm all for it. It's the bottom line is most veterinarians' primary concern is patient care. It's not about making a buck. And I think if you're looking at it from that perspective, obviously there are a lot of things to nitpick. But I think if we can save a buck there, but if the animal's going to get better and we're going to achieve the appropriate treatment, then I'm all for it.
Well, I'm really curious to know when we come back, because this has got to be one of those genres and industries where the people are heavily concerned with the amount of money that they're spending. And one, because they got their normal life they're already living. And two, they have this, a lot of times a dog to some people is like a kid. It's like a member of the family and they would do anything for it. So we're going to talk about how you really approach your customers with those big decisions. Also, I'm dying to ask a veterinarian, is the teeth cleaning, is that really necessary? That's a big upselling thing. We talked about the prescription. So really cool to go kind of uncovered and just get all the dirt out of a gentleman who does this for a living. Joel Kahn is a veterinarian with the Pismo Beach Veterinary Clinic. Veterinarians Exposed, baby. We are kind of reinvigorating that subject we had earlier in the week, and I was so, and I, maybe it's something with the way, because I have no complaints about, and it, we had one person, everyone seemed to be favorable to the topic and the discussion. There was one person who, I guess, works at a veterinary hospital, and they thought I was being a little bit hard, but I was just trying to be honest. And I think one thing that you do so well is just putting it out in such plain language. When some of these people, they may be so smart with the way they, obviously the way they treated Ali was perfect, but maybe this, that getting across that communication barrier.
Yeah, I think communication.
How do you break that? How do you tell someone?
It's hard, and you're dealing with a limited time slot in with an owner that's under a stressful situation, both financially, emotionally. This is a family member that they're treating.
Sure.
So they may be only hearing 10% of what even the best communicator says.
How do you approach these clients when obviously money is an issue? They're obviously not trying to be cheap, yet they're concerned.
Right.
Yet they don't want to skimp out on care for their, like you said, family member.
Right. So I think the key is communication, and the key is providing options. You know, so what I try to do is I say, look, here's best medicine. This is what I would do for my pet. And that's how I look at things, honestly. What would I do if this was my pet? So that's plan A. Plan B is the next step down. And, you know, if you have financial constraints, which we understand, I mean, it's a real world we live in, here's plan C. You know, so there's always options, and I try not to make anything absolute, because, of course, medicine, not black and white.
Do you feel some people in your practice may actually use that to their advantage? Like, well, you know, you almost like the guilt and the thing. Or do you find, have you ever met a bad vet? Or do you think most people, most vets, like, they're just...
I think you're coming at this from the perspective or from the assumption that every vet's trying to rip you off. I think that's the problem. And the truth is, if you're trying to make a quick buck, you don't go into veterinary medicine. I mean, vets, you know, they go through a lot of schooling. They come out of school now. The average debt for a veterinarian just from vet school, never mind undergrad, is $120,000 when they walk out of the door with their diploma. You don't go into veterinary medicine if you're looking to make a quick buck. That's the bottom line. And so I don't feel like that's a common, rampant issue in the profession. And I think, you know, I personally, and my wife's a vet, my brother's a vet, so I know a lot of vets very closely.
Sure.
I spend a good portion of my day thinking about my client's pocketbook and how I can best recommend testing and diagnostics in a way that makes sense so that we don't waste their money.
And yet you're not shorting on the care.
Without shorting on the care. And that is the hardest thing in my profession. If we had, you know, every pet was on insurance, it would be such an easy job.
That's right. Well, yeah. Now, talk about pet insurance. Do people need it? Is it smart? Is it expensive?
Well, the people that get pet insurance are the ones that had the $6,000 pet, you know, previously. And I think, you know, it's a gamble. You know, you're paying a monthly fee for something you may never need. I think the people that are happy with insurance are the ones that get a premium plan, you know, that's going to cover a dental cleaning, blood work, you know, one or two physical exams a year.
And how much does this run a month about?
It depends on the plan. I mean, I think they vary, you know, and the nice thing is I don't have to deal much with it.
$50 or $200 a month? I mean,
I'd probably $50 or much less than that, depending on the plan.
All right. Not bad. Joel Kahn is here. He's from the Pismo Beach Veterinary Clinic. Are you a doctor?
I'm a veterinary medical doctor.
Okay, yes. And then how long did you go to school for that? How long does a vet go to school for?
Well, we go to 4 years of undergraduate, and we get our bachelor's, and then we go to 4 years of vet school, and then you can, from there, go on to do an internship and residency, which can vary from another 1 year to another 6 years.
Gosh.
So it's a lot of school.
It sounds like it. What's the best way to get into the biz if somebody wants to? They love animals. They want to help them. Is this you intern somewhere? Like, what's
start the- young. You know, volunteer at your local humane society. I did that when I was in middle school. You know, with my older brother, I went to the humane society. I walked dogs. I went and shadowed a veterinarian. Most veterinarians are more than happy to have you come into the practice. Get as much experience as you can and take a lot of science classes.
What's the worst part of the job?
Well, I think honestly, the financial aspect is a really bad part of the job.
Wow,
because
really?
We have situations where we know we could help this animal if the owner could afford the treatment. And the treatment, you know, there may be some cases where there is no second and third option, where basically this animal needs surgery, they need it right now, it's going to be, you know, $1,500. And that's an awful decision to have to make. What we try to do at our practice, we actually have a fund designed for young, healthy animals that have a catastrophic, you know, hit by car or something like that, that's contributed to by a lot of our clients that donate to it to help offset some of those costs.
Oh my gosh, what a great idea.
Don't have to face some of those decisions.
Yeah, you do other animals besides, you do birds and stuff like that?
Yeah, we do limited exotics, you know, so that's going to be
out of cockatiel. Would you have done my cockatiel?
Sure.
Yeah, I remember I had my cockatiel for 21 years. Got it when I was 7, died several, you know, many years ago now, but I remember it like it was yesterday. And I went down to, started being weird, and I guess they're just old. They, you know, they get
Well, they get the same diseases that dogs, cats, and humans get.
Do they really?
And we like to see cockatiels every year for an exam, too. So,
when was the last time you cried because of your job?
Oh, I probably shed tears several times a week. I mean,
really?
We deal with some really tough things. Of course, euthanasia is a horrible thing. But at the same time, it's a kindness that we can offer pets, you know, a final dignity and a peaceful end. And that's a tough thing, especially if we've sometimes known those pets since they were puppies. And we know the owners, and we go through that emotional roller coaster with the owners. I mean, part of our job, I think, is therapist.
Yeah.
In some cases. And
do you take psychology classes when
No.
they don't give you any?
We're not well prepared for that. You know, I think that's why...
Communication classes, yeah. Financial classes. I mean, there's so many aspects of your job.
It's hard, and burnout is a huge part of our profession because of these emotional things. That it's a very emotional job at times and can be highly stressful.
We're going to have one more segment with Joel Kahn before we have to let him go on to his day. He is the owner of the Pismo Beach Veterinary Clinic. He is a veterinarian himself. We're going to continue with him and ask him the questions you want to know about Advantix, the Vectras, and Frontlines. Do they work? Which one's the best? Teeth cleaning. Do you really need it? That's a big upsell thing that you guys do. Food. What are you supposed to feed your dog? Does the more expensive the food mean the better the food? All these questions, we will have a real vet answer next on the queue. Joel Kahn, he is from the Pismo Beach Veterinary Clinic. Thank you for being up and at it, my friend.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
We were talking off the air about my specific situation with Allie, and although, you know, you welcome your clients asking a lot of questions because it shows they care about their animal, but you found, and when I explained to you everything, that you was probably care better than a lot of places that...
Well, yeah, I think, of course, asking questions is important, and we actually try to encourage that in our clients because someone who's well-informed is going to be a better, not only a better client, but, of course, a better pet owner.
Sure.
And a better, better person for their animal. The service that you receive, they actually were savvy enough to recommend right off the bat a urine culture, a urinalysis, rather than just handing you blindly an antibiotic. Now, granted, just like you said, that antibiotic is going to treat 95% of infections. So
sure.
It wouldn't have been wrong for them to say, here's some antibiotics, call me in 2 weeks, let me know what happened. What you found, because they were, you know, savvy enough to do this test, is that she actually had a resistant infection. So what would have happened is you would have been treating with the wrong drug for 2 weeks. Meanwhile, she's potentially suffering. And instead, you got straight to the heart of the matter. She's on the right drug. She's already better.
What does the bladder infection feel like?
Well, you know, I think you have to ask someone who's had one.
Allie, come here. Allie.
but what we know from the human side is you feel like you have to pee all day long.
Oh,
so imagine how that feels.
She just put her head on my lap.
And
when you actually go to pee, it
burns when you urinate. So it's a pretty awful feeling. It may not be acutely painful,
now,
but
some dogs
all day
are,
long.
I've learned some dogs are like babies when it comes to pain. Some dogs mask it and don't let you see it. How do you know if your dog is either, you prick it in the foot with a needle?
That's hard.
Know?
I mean, really? The average dog does mask it. I mean,
okay.
Especially a Lab or a Golden.
I mean,
they're goofy. Their whole goal in life is to please you. And most dogs, we catch a lot of urinary tract infections that are asymptomatic. The owners haven't noticed any symptoms. So it is hard. You know, panting, restlessness, decreased appetite, these are all symptoms you can look for.
I've tried to feed her really good. I've given her this, like, healthy, natural choice, large breed adult, whatever, blue bag. Anyways, I noticed that, like, a year or so ago, the Mars Candy Company bought out the company who made my food. And this one lady was saying, look at the ingredients, and this is the way it used to be. So they're changing the ingredients, yet I'm still paying $50 a bag for this stuff. What is good food to treat your dog, and are you beholden to one company? Do you sell it? I mean, what is the kind of food we should be looking for? And does the more expensive mean the better for your animal?
Absolutely not. So I think a lot of what you're paying for in today's commercial dog foods is marketing. And that's true in every, you know, industry. You know, talk to your veterinarian, have that discussion. Most vets do not sell, you know, kind of wellness diets. So I'm not beholden to anyone. I'll give my honest opinion. And, you know, there's nothing that says your grocery store brand is any worse than your Petco, pet specialty store brand. And in fact, a lot of that is how the bag looks. And, you know, and the marketing behind it.
Should you not be looking for grains or poultry meal? Are there things, are there catchphrases, or is that even just...
There's a ton of fad and catchphrases. We have this whole gluten thing now, which has become huge. And
yeah.
You'll see, even on the human side, you'll see things that say gluten-free. Well, they never had gluten to begin with. you know, but they're going to advertise gluten-free because that's going to get people to buy them. So it is a fad, and so many people now are worried about grain and their pets. And the truth is, you know, most of our food allergies are related to the protein, the chicken, the beef, the lamb, not the carbohydrate source. So a lot of it is media hype.
Okay, well, that's simply put. We got Joel Condon here. He is a bona fide veterinarian. We are getting some of that practice exposed, letting us know all the ins and outs of it. Teeth cleaning. Now, you corrected me because I called it a technique of upselling. And you kind of took offense to that, and I like how you did. Explain this.
Right. I would call that preventative medicine. And we're not talking about teeth cleaning because we're trying to make a buck. We're talking about it because we truly believe it's a real thing. And it's an important thing for your pet. We know dental disease can predispose to heart, liver, lung disease. It can lead to chronic pain. In fact, is probably the number two cause of chronic pain in older pets.
Sure.
I see dogs that come in at age 14 that have never had a cleaning. Their teeth are falling out of their heads. They're getting jaw fractures from bone loss.
So I can't go to PetSmart and for $10 buy that weird-shaped brush and that dog toothpaste?
Absolutely you can. We would love it if you did that, because if you can brush at home, starting at a puppy, you can avoid some of that cleaning. Now, just like you, hopefully you brush twice a day and floss every day.
Sure.
You still have to see the dentist every 6 months. And the same is true for animals. Their teeth are built just like ours. And so, you know, as we're getting better at what we do and learning more about what makes a pet healthy, we're recommending more things. Doesn't mean you have to do it.
Yeah.
But it is going to seem like we're selling you things. But in fact, we're recommending it because we believe it's going to help your pet's life.
Flea control, Dr. Khan. Talk to me, baby. What are we doing? Yeah. Is it Vectra? That's what Allie's on now. I heard it's the new thing. Everything else is all the dogs are immune to everything else. What's going on?
No, so there is some hype here, too. What's happened is Frontline and Advantage, which came out in 95 and 96, respectively, have gone, to some extent, over-the-counter and actually Frontline's case generic. And, you know, we are seeing a decreased effectiveness with some of these products. They were amazing products when they came out. They're still pretty good. The truth is, if I have a pet on flea control year-round, regardless of brand, I'm pretty happy. There are some new products that have come out that are completely new and very safe. Insecticides, fleas haven't seen them before, so we're having a faster flea kill, which is important if you have a dog that's very flea allergic. So a product like Vectra, for example, kills a flea in 4 to 6 hours. Frontline could be 12 to 24 hours, and that can make a difference.
And do we need to look? You know, some people live near water. They want to make sure the mosquitoes aren't causing them an issue. Do these things help mosquitoes, heartworms?
Depends on the product. So heartworm disease is a concern in this county. It's not nearly as bad as it is in Georgia, where we have more mosquitoes. The other thing heartworm medication is going to do for you is it protects against roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms, all of which can be passed on to humans.
Dang!
And a CDC study in the human side in 2007 showed 14% of humans have exposure to roundworms, so 1 in 7. And they're probably getting it from their pets. And so that's where the heartworm preventative can help.
What's going to happen to me if I get some of that roundworm?
Well, in kids, it can cause blindness. It can migrate through organs, cause organ failure. It can be very, very serious. And immunocompromised people or elderly, it can be life-threatening.
So are these the best ways to control fleas, ticks, mosquitoes? Are these little drops on the back of the neck? Are you old school? Do you like to do the flea collar still or any of these?
There really aren't any good flea collars out there. So no to flea collars. There's a couple of tick collars that are worthwhile that are veterinary products.
Okay.
But there's a lot of new generation flea control products out there that maybe work a little bit better, that are easy to administer. Some people don't like putting things on the back of the neck, so we have it now in oral forms. So there's a lot of options, and that's really what we have now.
Final question. Tell me the story of the first time you ever had to put a dog to sleep.
Oh, boy.
And it's going to be a tough
one. This is a tough situation always, and you know, you know, I don't remember the very first case.
Come on, you don't? You do.
The problem is we do this, you know, probably 7, 10, 14 times a week. So it's something we deal with very regularly. But what I can tell you is I've had some really tough ones, you know, ones where I know the people and I know how much they love their animal. And I've grown to love the animal because I've known them for years and years. But at the same time, as we're going through that emotional roller coaster, I know in my heart, this is the right thing. This is a kind thing. So I always tell owners, you know what? This is a blessing and it's a curse, because we can spare your pet from suffering, but nobody wants to have to make that decision. And so our job is to help guide that decision when the time is right, and help owners and pets through those end-of-life processes.
You so belong being a vet. You totally found, you know, not everyone can say they became exactly what they needed and what God wanted them to be. And I can just, like, watching you and listening to you, it's like, well, you nailed it, man. So congratulations, and you to your wife, too, man, because you said she does the same thing.
That's right. And my brother.
And your brother. So your parents must have been like, both my sons did it, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so quick plug for your place, Pismo Beach Veterinary Clinic. I imagine that's where, in Los Osos?
It's actually in Pismo Beach, believe it or not. We're open 7 days a week, every day till 5:30.
Okay, and where do we find you?
990 Price Street, and we're on the web, PismoBeachVet.com.
Okay, so you're downtown by what, Crap?
We're right across from Honeymoon Cafe and next to Pismo Bob's Hardware Store.
Yeah, all right.
And
a little further down, huh?
Find us on Facebook, Pismo Beach Vet on Facebook.
All right, well, man, thank you very much for being up and at 'em in the morning. Appreciate you coming in. And if you missed any part of Dr. Khan's interview, we were going to have this in its entirety on the web at Q1045FM.com.
Q.